If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I think it's so important for people to understand where you came from and why you do this.
I'm originally from Uganda, so I grew up poor of the poorest. The only meal we had was once every other day, and would have beans and potatoes. That's all I had. For me, on one side, I had poverty. On the other, I had a mean dad. For every abuse I received, my mother received the same. So at the age of 10, I was like, you know what? I went to the bus station and I asked the lady, hey, of all these buses, which one goes the farthest?
How did you survive on the streets?
One day I'm trying to steal from someone. This person just looked at me and said, hey, kid, what's your name? And one day he said, hey, Peter, if you had an opportunity to go to school, would you love to go to school? And I laughed at him. I was like, you're the dumbest human being I've ever met.
Now, you are a foster dad. You've adopted kids. How many kids have you fostered at this point?
43.
Do you have a limit on how many kids you want to adopt in the future? How do you date? Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Let me introduce you to Peter Mutabazi, a dedicated advocate and influential voice in the world of foster care. His story is one of remarkable resilience and compassion. Peter himself once experienced the hardships of being a homeless child in Uganda, but he overcame those challenges and has now become a devoted foster parent and mentor. He's fostered over 40 children. It's unbelievable. His mission is to inspire others to see the foster care system as a powerful way to change lives, especially for vulnerable children who need love, support, and stability. Peter's tireless work not only emphasizes the importance of fostering, but also demonstrates the profound difference one person can make in shaping the future of countless young lives. You have to check out his Instagram, Foster Dad Flipper. You will be astounded at what this guy takes on and does. He's the most amazing father. I'm excited for you to meet Peter Mutabazi. Peter, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. I'm so excited to have you here.
Well, I am excited to be here as well. Like, you could choose me to read to me. I'm honored.
Oh, so yeah, I was looking through my Instagram one day, a long time ago, and came across your feed and then started following you and have sort of followed your story throughout and found you to be so fascinating when I found out your backstory and why you became a foster and adoptive parent. So do you mind if we start there? Because I think it's so important for people to understand where you came from and why you do this.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we do what we do sometimes because of the journey we've traveled. So I'm originally from Uganda. So I grew up poor of the poorest. You know, it's really hard to explain to an American what poverty sometimes really is. But think about, like, you grew up, but you never had 2 meals a day for most of your child life. You know, I did not have a name until when I was 2 years old. Why? Because for every 100 children were born in my village, 60 would die before the age of two. So most moms didn't name their kids until they were two. So at two, that's when I was given name. But also for moms, think about it. Like, if you can't feed your child for a day, you know, like, how do you tell them to dream? How do you inspire them when you can't feed them? And so that was really my life, poor of the poorest. We went to fetch water 3 to 4 miles away. You know, the only meal we had was once every other day, and we would have beans and potatoes. That's all I had. The only 2 days in 365 days I had a different meal was Christmas. So Christmas we had chicken. So I grew up knowing that Christmas was about chicken, and Easter we had beef. So those are the only 2 days in my entire life as a teen and a little boy I had. Then at age of four, I began to realize that not only were I poor, but my dad was the most abusive human being you could imagine. So for me, on one side, I had poverty. On the other, I had a mean dad. So there wasn't a place to hide. Outside, it was, of course, as a poor kid, you know, then inside the house, it was just mean in every way, shape, form you could imagine. And then on the other hand, I had one parent that loved me, but she could not protect me. Why? Because for every abuse I received, my mother received the same. And most of the time, she would receive the abuse because of us as kids. Think it this way. When she would go to my dad and say, the kids haven't eaten, would you give them something to eat? She would get the beatings for that. So as a kid, you learn and watch, like, your needs put your mom in trouble. So the guilt that comes with that. So at the age of 10, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna die anyway, but why should I give my father the opportunity to kill me? So I had never been 20 miles away from my village. So I went to the bus station and I asked the lady, hey, of all these buses, which one goes the farthest? And the lady said that one. I got on that bus and I ran away. Never been 20 miles away, and I went 500 kilometers away. And it wasn't, Rachel, it wasn't like I was looking for a better future. For me, my head was, I would rather die, but die in the hands of a stranger than my father. So that was the reason why I was running away. And of course, my only option, you know, when I arrived in Kampala was to be a street kid. So I became a street kid from the age of 10 to the age of almost 16.
So when you were leaving, was it hard for you to leave your mother, knowing that you were leaving her behind?
I think for me, you know, the idea was death. So I wasn't really, you know, that I loved my mom, but I just didn't want to see all the abuse, but also the pain. The for me, yes, it was hard to leave my mom and my siblings as well. But somehow I could not take it anymore. You know, I'm the oldest of five. So I think the older you are, the more you understand the pain. So for me, I was like, I can't deal with this. So yes, I felt guilty, but also it was my only option that I had to run away.
So your story gets more interesting after you got become a street kid, but I just do want to ask, did you ever, I mean, I don't know how it works. Could you call them on the phone? Did you ever find out what happened to your father? Do you speak to your mother? Do you talk to your siblings?
Well, at this time, of course, as a street kid, you know, you're treated, I don't know, for most of your viewers, hopefully they've been to third world countries. But as a street kid, you're treated more like a stray animal, you know? I mean, that's how I slept in the sewer. Why? Because the sewer smelled so bad that no other human beings can go. But for us as street kids, that was a safe place to be, you know? I was never called a name. Why? Because they treated me like garbage. So there wasn't an opportunity to connect back home. You know, remember, I was 500 miles away. By then, there were no phones or anything. You know, I mean, Uganda then was in the worst position. There were no phone. You know, there were no phones available during that time.
Got it. But
So
I
there
mean, to
wasn't
this
any.
day, have you never seen your family again?
Oh, well, no, at 19, I went back home, you know? So at 19, I went back to see my mom and dad. And now I get to see them and they're doing well. But it took me, you know, almost 7, 8 years before I could go back.
Okay, so continue with your story because it's so fascinating. So you became a street kid. How did you survive on the streets?
Well, on the streets, like you know, think of it as a street kid, like you're abused in every shape, form you can imagine, things I cannot describe here. But when you're seen as an animal, when you're treated like less of a human being, I mean, you know, at home, I wish I was dead the next day. On the streets, I just wish I was dead the next hour, because that how severe the abuse was, you know, from adults. And that became my life. So finally, as street kids, we learned how to survive, steal while you're helping. So we would steal while we are carrying people's food, because it was easy to steal food than money, because most people didn't make a dollar a day. So one day I'm trying to steal from someone, and this human being or this person, you know, just looked at me and said, "Hey, kid, what's your name?" And that really rattled me. Here's why, Rachel. For everyone who was kind was abusive. So for us as street kids, we identified danger by who was kind. So if you're kind, that means you're going to harm me. So my whole thought was run for your life. But before I could run, he gave me something to eat. And so he left. You know, did that scare me? Absolutely. So the next day he comes back, you know, he gave me something to eat. So I saw the pattern on what days he would come. And that day I didn't have to steal. So he fed me for 1 year and a half. And one day he said, "Hey, Peter, if you had an opportunity to go to school, would you love to go to school?" And I laughed at him. I was like, you're the dumbest human being I've ever met. Here's why. When you're a street kid abused every night, like, do you ever think of going to school?
No, I wouldn't think so.
No, it's like me asking you, Rachel, they are sending people to the moon. Would you like to go? Like, how many nights do you go to bed saying, "Man, I wish I could go to the moon"? Because it's far-fetched. As right. A street kid, the same, going to school, you knew only those who have mom and dad, only those who are hopeful, only those who want to see the future. For me, I didn't want to see the future. It was just terrible every day. And right. I thought the next day would be the same. So for me, I was like, never, forget it. So he let it go. And next time he comes back, he said, "Hey, if you go to school, there'll be lunch, dinner, and breakfast." I was like, what time do we go? You know, because for me, the attraction was food. And I had never heard of a place where you can have three meals. So when he said, "Can we go? You know, would you like to go?" I said, "Sure." But it was more of, I want to test you, but also I don't believe there's a place you can have three meals. And sure enough, he put me in a boarding school, and that's how he changed my life.
Oh my God. I'm sort of speechless about this. So some, the kindness of some stranger that wanted to give you an opportunity to have a better life is what you found.
Yes, but it wasn't even that. He saw a thief, but he didn't treat me as a thief, you know?
Why do you think you stood out to him as someone with potential?
I don't know, because maybe I showed up every time I was there. Maybe I don't know. Maybe there's something that he saw in me. He said, "You know, this kid has a potential, mm-hmm. and I want to give that to this kid." But here's the thing. I didn't know that I had potential either. No one had ever seen it to me. You know, these are the words that I had from my father every day. Peter, you'll never mount anything. Peter, you're useless and worthless. Peter, I wish you were never born so I didn't have to feed you. That's what I heard.
Wow.
And I believe those.
So how do you even go to boarding school and not have any education before that? How hard was that?
Yes, that was difficult. So it was the food that made me work hard to get to stay, because I had never had consistent food. But now that I saw food came lunchtime, breakfast and dinner, now it became my goal to keep the meal. So that meant if I want to go to school, I went to school. I never had a pair of shoes before then, you know? So from the age of zero to for almost 16, I never had a pair of shoes. But I wore those pair of shoes he gave me because I thought, if I can wear these shoes, they will give me food, you know? If I can perform better in school, they will give me food. So that's really the one thing I liked the most. It's the one thing that helped me to stay and work hard. And that was it. But also, not only did he just take me to school, you know, after 4 months, he invited me in his home. So for the first time, I saw a family that ate together. I saw a man who wasn't mean. I saw a man who was kind. So for the first time, I saw something I wanted to be. I was like, if there's someone I want to be, I want to be like him. And I knew he was educated. I knew he was kind. And so by doing what he thought I could do is really what inspired me to do better and to go beyond what I thought I could ever be.
So I'm curious, was he the person that you looked up to almost like a father figure or a parent? Or did you also find in your boarding school some teachers or older people that stood out to you and really helped you and took you under their wing?
Well, the teachers, so remember, I had no formal education, but also my behavior as a street kid were horrible. You know, I didn't know the rules. I didn't know the boundaries. You know, stealing for me was just as breathing. It hadn't anything to do with bad. But these teachers never saw the worst in me. They never kicked me out. That they always believed in me. Every time I got an F, they would say, Peter, well done. I'm like, wait, how? You know, but because they kept using words of affirmation, that really helped me to build me to believe in that. Like, well, if they think I matter, maybe I can get a D, you know? And if I got a D, you know, they would still be kind of like, maybe I can get a C. And it's through the kinds of words that they use that I never had before. And being gentle and kind and not always seeing the worst in me, but always seeing the best in me, that really helped me excel and do better and want to stay. So yes, the teachers, but also him, because he always came and he always brought me to his home every Sunday just to get to know him. So now I had something to dream for, because I had never seen a kind man, but I saw kind. You know, I saw he can come home and sit home and they have food. I had never had that with my father. So I thought, listen, if I want to be successful, he's showing me how. So my standards became, I want to be like him. And that's really what helped me excel. That he
Go ahead.
That he just didn't drop me at school, but even he brought me in his personal life. And that's really what helped me.
Yeah. So did you end up graduating from high school?
Yes. Yeah, so I stayed in Uganda. So I graduated high school and then I went to university in Uganda. And then I got a scholarship to go study in England. And then that's how I came to the United States. So overly educated through the kindness of a stranger who saw the best in me.
Wow. And you obviously liked school. You liked learning.
Absolutely, because I saw how far it can go, you know, and how far it can take you. You know, again, I'm the oldest of five and my siblings have all gone through university, not because they could do it. But I think they saw the example. They were like, if Peter can do it, we can do it as well. But I could not also take them away from my family. You know, so I thought the best way I can be there for my siblings is to give them what I was given. So I worked so hard to make sure that they also went to school, because it was the only way I can yank them out of the abuse from my family.
Right. Okay. So what were your first jobs? Like, what did you do to make money when you were younger?
So most of the time I would, when I was younger, when he took me in, he would give me opportunities to wash cars. So I would wash all the family cars, you know, I would contribute in their family. Like if they needed cleaning, anything they needed, or planting things, all the garden stuff, like I would do all that. In some way, I think in my head, I thought, if I can do what they ask me, maybe they will still be my friend. Maybe they won't yank the things they have given me. Right. But also at school, so instead of going for holidays, for me, I'll stay at school and work as security, you know, as a gardener. And that's really, because I didn't have a family to go to, only them. Right. But I found ways of, you know, as a street kid, I think you work so hard for free. When you find out you can actually earn, it was like, more natural for me to find work easy.
Right. And when you were studying and in school, did you think you wanted to be something in particular that you were studying for? Did you have aspirations all of a sudden and goals?
Yes. You know, my first degree was in international business administration. So I wanted to learn business, you know, from an international way. You know, I saw how Uganda worked with Kenya and Tanzania. I was like, if I can understand how to market and work for companies that are outside Uganda, that I would do so. Then when I went to England, I wanted to study crisis management, because I lived in a war zone, you know, Sudan, Uganda, Rwanda, you know, in a place where there was always atrocities of wars. So I thought if I can have good education, that I think I can work in charities that really bring peace and help during crisis. So that's what I started at university in England.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then after you graduate, what was next for you? Where did you go?
So I didn't, you know, like, remember, when you come from a village, you kind of think life in a small way, you know? Mm-hmm. But I met two Americans, you know, who were working in a refugee during the Sudan war, you know, and I worked with them for a few months. And one day they said, "You know, Peter, you're really good with kids on how you work with them, on how you see the best in them. Like, you should really focus on working with, you know, charities that, you know, work with kids." I was like, "Really?" And sure enough, I found like, hey, I can do that. So I worked for International Committee of Red Cross, and then worked for Compassion International, and then worked for World Vision. You know, that I wanted to give hope the same way someone had given me, you know? And for me, working for charities that were working with children, I felt like that's a place I belonged, but also that I had more value I can add from what I had gone through as a child, but also to show the impact of when we believe in a child on how far we can take them.
So when we find you now, you know, you are a foster dad, you've adopted kids. Tell me how you got to decide that this was something you wanted to do, and what was the first moment that you were like, okay, I need to figure out how to become, I assume the first one was a foster, or was it an adoptive kid? Tell me what happened there.
So, you know, so when I first my first time in the United States, like I think I struggled seeing the wealth, you know.
Okay.
When my first day in the restaurant, I walked in and, you know, they gave me food and I ate everything. But then I realized that food was being thrown away because people didn't finish their food. And for me, that bothered me, like, wait a minute, other people are dying for lack of beans and potatoes.
Oh,
Food
yeah.
is being thrown away. So that really made me question my existence, especially in the United States. So then I go to learn that there are kids in the United States who go home hungry. I was like, how can we throw food away, but yet there are kids in a neighborhood that have nowhere to go? So I have traveled over the world, but I never seen a black person who was adopting in Uganda or in Ethiopia or in China. They were always Caucasian and married. I was black and single. So in my mind, I believed the lie. Like, I thought you have to be white, you have to be married, because that's all I saw as a, you
Sure.
know, what I traveled. So for me, I knew there was no way. So I walked into the foster care system and I said, hey, I would like to mentor teenagers. Would you give me an opportunity at least to meet them 1 hour a week? So then the social
Just
worker.
to spend time with them and mentor them and hang out with them.
Yeah, just mentor them, you know, like if they need to go eat, if they need to go buy something, like I can do that. But the social worker who received me said, hey, have you ever thought of being a foster? I was like, yeah, I've thought about it, but I'm single. So I'm not called, you know, I don't qualify. She said, hey, no, 30% of our foster parents are single. So you can be, literally, it was on Monday. On Thursday, I began the classes to be a foster parent. So my whole goal was to be a foster parent. It wasn't really adoption. It was, if I can be there for kids while mom and dad are getting it together and they go back, that would be the greatest gift I can give them back. So for me, once I knew I can, I was like, okay, where do I sign up? And that was really my kind of my trigger to
Wow.
foster parent.
So, okay. So, what are the credentials and classes and things people have to do to qualify to be a foster parent?
So one, you have to be at least 21 in most states. So you have to be 21.
Yeah.
You have to have, you know, insurance. You have to have your a job. Like you take care of yourself, because they don't want you to depend on the children, but you take care of yourself. You don't have to rent or own a home, but so long as you have a safe home, either it's rented or you own it, and there's extra bedroom for the kids. The other part is to do the training. You know, you go through, you have to be licensed. You know, some states take 10 weeks or 10 classes. So each depends on where you are. So you take classes. Is all you have to do. And then they have to do the background check. They have to, you know, turn every stone about your life and figure out if you're fit to be a parent. And that's all that really takes: kindness, loving children, and willing to give kids the best you can.
So, and at the moment, the first time you were doing it, where, what state were you living in?
So I was living in Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
So once I wanted to really be, you know, I knew I could not take on a full-time job, you know, and still be a foster parent. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna be my own boss. So I moved to Oklahoma to be to flip houses because I could be my own boss as a single dad at the same time be a foster dad. So that's what where I moved, and that's where I started to be a foster parent. So for the first 12 children I had were all from Oklahoma.
Okay, wait, this is fascinating. So, how long did the course take you? Like you said, it started on Thursday. How long until you graduated?
So it took, you know, it took only maybe three months, how long it took. But for me, I had to, you know, remember when you're a bachelor, your house is kind of bachelor life. So I wanted to make it kid friendly. So it took me about 5 to 6 months to get all that ready. And after 6 months, I was licensed. And the first day I had my first child.
Wow. So it's that quick. You're not waiting around for all this. Okay. So when you're a foster parent, how does it work? Are you saying, here's the sex that I prefer, here are the ages I prefer, or you just get what is in need?
Well, you know, so for me, I like to be licensed through a private agency. So they build a profile for you. You say, hey, I'm waiting to take a kid between 4 and 10, you know? Okay. Because for me, I want to take kids who can talk and dress themselves and go to school, you know?
Yeah.
Two, I'm a single parent, so I could not take kids who are fragile, need more, you know, medication. Like, I could not do it. So I was like, hey, I cannot do this, you know? I didn't know I could be a dad to teenagers. So I said, no teenagers. I cannot do teenagers, you know? Again, I'm a single dad. So I say, I prefer boys rather than girls. But those are just parameters you put. But usually you don't get what you ask for because, you know, sometimes you say, I want a 5-year-old, but they have a brother who's 12 years old, you know?
Right.
So, but you can put just suggestion, like boundaries, but usually they will try to fit in those if you're not too strict of what you want. If you say, hey, I want a 5-year-old girl single, that might take a year to get.
Right. I see what you're saying. So, and if you're licensed, or is that the word, licensed in Oklahoma, does that mean you're only getting kids from Oklahoma so that you can continue them in the same schools, obviously, stuff like that?
Correct. So you're licensed by two agencies, your county and your state. So if you're private, you are licensed by the state. If you're local, you're licensed by the county. So you choose which one you want. And you can only take a child within where you're licensed. If it's county, only county. If it's state, you can take any child from from anywhere in the same state. So license don't switch or don't transfer. You can only get a license by one state.
And is the license just to be a foster parent, or does that mean you can also be be applying for adoptive kids? Am I using my terminology?
No, it's licensed to be a foster parent. So once adoption, then they change agency. So no longer are you under the foster care, but now you're under the adoption agency.
Okay, so that's totally different. Okay, so let's talk about foster care. Who are the typical children that are coming to a complete stranger, sometimes in the middle of the night, from foster care? How does that work?
So it happens in different ways. Most time is what happens to the parents. And, sometimes if there's an accident on the highway and the kids survived, but the parents didn't survive, those kids they're taken by DSS. So then they have to find a home for them to be that night as they look for the next of kin or who the parents are. Or sometimes drugs, you know, most of, you know, the drug issues we have in the United States, you know, most people will lose their kids because they're high and they cannot take care of their children because of neglect. You know, some sexual abuse that some families or most kids are abused by family members, that once that is discovered, then they have to take the kids out of that home, you know?
So usually it's coming from Child Protective Services, or the police have showed up and had to take the kid and they go to a foster home. I mean, could it be at all hours of the day, or is it kind of planned? You're going to get this kid on Thursday when the parents have to go to court.
No, it's all unplanned because they never warn the parents we are taking. Think about if they came to you and say, I'm taking your kid, you might just take off, you know?
Right, so they just
show up in the middle of the night while you're sleeping and they're like, boom, with the police. And, you know, they take them. And that's when they look for us. They say, Peter, I have two kids, you know, and I need a home for 24 hours. So we call those emergency placement, you know, short term. Or you're a mom, you go give birth at the hospital, and then they test you and they find out you have drugs in your system. That child cannot go with you. That child stays in the hospital.
Wow.
Or they call a foster DHS, say, hey, you know, this child, you know, we found the parents that are addictive to drugs in their system, so this child cannot go back. And that's when we come in. They say, hey, we need emergency as we look for the next of kin to take the child.
So for the most part, when you're getting a foster child, there's some trauma involved, some sort of emotional thing that this kid is definitely going through. And I'm imagining, even if their parents have been terrible parents for, you know, some way, shape, or form, they don't want to just go with a complete stranger, right? I mean, are they missing their parent tremendously, or are they, or half the time, are they missing the parent and the other half, they're so excited to get away?
Well, 99.9, they didn't choose to come to your home. So they are terrified, you know, and sometimes even the abuse that is happening, the kids are not aware because for them, it's normal. You know, think about if you're born in a drug home, that's all you've seen. That's all you know, you know, when your mom has had, a different man every other week. I mean, that's all you know. So plucking you out of that, it causes trauma to the child because you're putting them in an environment they're not familiar with. But also too, they love their parents no matter what they do to them, that they never wish to come. So no child comes to us that is excited to be with us at all.
No matter
how severe the abuse was. It's later. So they build that trust later. But usually for the first time, you're a stranger. They don't know you and they're terrified.
Okay, so tell me about what that first time was like. I mean, you have an empty house just with you, and then all of a sudden, this new child comes in. Tell me all about that.
Oh, Rachel, oh gosh. So first of all, they give you a license, and you're like, okay, you know, 2 months from now? No. The same night, they're like, hey, keep your phone. We might calling you for a child. And sure enough, they called me at 3 a.m. They're like, hey, there's a kid who needs a home and we are bringing the child to you. I mean, I panicked, you know? So when the child arrived, so this is my head again, like you overthink about things. So I put him, you know, in bed, and then I locked every door, and then I pulled the couch and put it against his door. Because I thought he's going to run out, like he's going to open that door and he's going to run out. Like, I'm not going to give that up.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, so how old was he?
He was 5, you know?
Okay.
But, you know, so he woke up and he said, Dad, that was the weird thing. He says, Dad, can I have something to eat? I was like, I slept the whole night worried. All you want is just breakfast. I mean, that was my head just turning around. And that's all he wanted. Just, I want breakfast, and he felt safe. And from then, I kind of really, you know, it helped me to learn like, oh, I don't have to make it a big deal. But I really can follow the child's guide. You know, they're hungry, they need to eat, and make their life comfortable and joyful as well, as much as I can.
So how many kids have you fostered at this point?
43.
Oh my God. And a lot of them overlap. They're at different, how does that work?
So usually for me, I'm licensed for 5. So I can have 5 kids at once. You know, so, you know, most time I take siblings because I really hate kids when they are separated. So I prefer to take siblings so they can stay together. It lessens the trauma. So usually, yes, right now I adopted 3, you know, but now I have 2 foster kids, you know.
Got it. Okay. Oh my goodness.
So, you know, and most time, like, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, my youngest is a sibling of the ones I just adopted. So sometimes... Okay. You might take 2 and adopt them, but when they give birth and the same thing happens, because now I'm next of kin, they get to call me like, hey, a sibling of the ones you already have has come into the system. Would you take the child?
No? Wow. Wow. Okay, wait, let's go back to the 40 plus that you've fostered. How does that work as a foster? Are you told this could be for a day and this could be for 5 years? I mean, is there a limit to how long foster kids can be in a home?
No, Rachel. No, they tell you 24 hours. You're like, okay, 24 hours. And then 24 hours comes, they're like, hey, can you give us extra few days? You give them extra few days. A week passes by and they're like, can he go to school? Because we can't find a home. So no one ever tells you how long, you know? Wow. Anthony, my the one I adopted, they asked for the weekend. They said, can he just come there for a weekend? And literally I said, okay, only the weekend. Well, it was my first son to adopt, you know? So no one can ever give you the date or when.
Right.
Most time, I mean, you know, if let's say, you know, there was death in the family, you know, the next of kin, the family is going to come and take the child. So that we always know, but you don't know, is it in a week? Is it in a month? You know?
Right.
And remember, before DHS gives back the child, they have also to do background check on the by parents, on the families.
Wow. Okay.
So you just can't come and claim the child, be like, okay, but we need to do background check on you.
Right. So what is the responsibility of a foster parent?
You are a parent 99.9999. The well-being of that child, you feed them, You help them overcome the trauma. You're responsible for their health. You are the one texting them to the hospital. You are the parent in every shape, form.
Until they leave, until they're not in your care.
Correct. But
so I guess part of that question though is, what is the responsibility of, like, how do you manage having a kid come in who's so traumatized sometimes and you want to make them feel safe and loved, but you know that this is not their forever home. So how do you create a forever home environment where they don't feel so unstable, knowing that they can go back into potentially different foster homes or instability?
Right. You cannot control where they come from and where they're going, but you can control what you have. So for us as foster parents, what we try to do is normalcy. Give the child normal life, you know? Mm-hmm. So make sure that, you know, you visit other friends that you know, so they know, hey, there's just more than this person. You know, make, you know, let them go to school so they feel they are part of the community, you know?
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Give them the normalcy as though nothing changed on the other side.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The continuation of, you know, what child needs, play, be, you know, be whatever they need to, but at the same time, create an environment that will help them overcome, let's say, things they've gone through. You know, we've had kids who steal. Are they stealing because they want to? No, because their parents always send them to go steal at Walmart somewhere, you know? Some kids will hoard food because there was never enough, so they hoard the food. So how do you help them to say, hey, there'll be food tomorrow, you know?
Right, right. So you try and do your best while you have them.
Exactly, you know? Or some, my normal life is abnormal to them. So think about, if your dad and mom always yelled, you know, for me who doesn't yell when I ask my child to do something or to respond, they don't respond because they think that's not how we receive commands. Like you have to yell and use the cuss word. I know what you need, you know? So in some way to like help the child rethink the way they do things, like, hey, we don't use that language. It's not appropriate for you as a four-year-old to use, but for them it's normal, you know, but you're trying now to kind of detox of what wasn't normal for them to do, but in a gentle way and over time.
Right. What are some of the biggest challenges you found in the foster kids you've had? Like, has anyone run away? Have their parents tried to come and take them when they weren't supposed to? I mean, was there any craziness that went along with it?
Well, yes, most of the challenge is that they take the kids away, but they never explain why they took the kids away. So that has been one of the challenges, because for me as an adult, they told me what the issue was, but they never told the child, you know? I'll give you an example. If the parents are taking drugs, the kids, usually they will hide it, but they will see them high, you know? But they never explain like, hey, we are taking you away because your dad and mom are always high, you know? No. So when the child comes to me, it's like, but what did my parents do? What is that? But also, I'm part of the system. I'm part of the bad guys. It's not just the police that came to get them or the social worker, but I'm part of the system. So they don't like me most of the time or right away because they feel I'm part of the people against their mom and dad.
Sure, I understand that. And then, but doesn't that cause disruption in a house that you've worked so hard to create this like love and bond and calmness in?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
How do you deal with that?
You know, kids are kids. You know, I think for me, because I was one of those kids and I had the same trauma, like it really helps me to understand where they come from. So my focus isn't so much on the behaviors. It's so much of where is it coming from and how can I help them really see life or do things in a different way with time. You know, of course, my kids too, they understand that we have to go through the relearning lesson. Every time we get a child, my kids have to go through like, hey, remember, this kid didn't have 1, 2, 3, 4. This kid doesn't understand 1, 2, 3, 4. So let's have grace towards him or her, you know, but knowing that at one point, things are going to get better, you know?
Right.
An advantage for me is my kids were also in the same position as well. Though they don't do what these kids are doing now, but
they're understanding.
Yeah, they kind of relate like, oh, we understand why.
Yeah. Okay. What are the rules with adopting then? Like what has to happen for a child to be up for adoption?
Yes. So just because I'm a foster parent, even if I foster for a child for 4 years, it does not guarantee me to be the adoptive parent.
Right.
So in order to be adopted, the parental rights have to be terminated, you know, meaning the judge ordered like, hey, these parents are no longer fit to be parents. So they cut off the parental rights. Then the children are available at that point for adoption. But before I come in as a foster parent, they go to the next of kin. So they go to their uncles, their aunts, their grandparents, someone related to them to see if they can adopt the child.
Wait, I can imagine that that could be somewhat hard if there happens to be a grandmother, but the grandmother doesn't seem like they can provide that good of a life, or they don't really give a shit about the kid that much. They have their own life, but they are the next of kin. Like, how do you deal with that?
Exactly. You know, the law says next of kin come first. So you can't fight it. You know, when the grandma or the next uncle who wasn't there for, you know, like sometimes we have the kid for 4 years from the time they are born, they come to you and they turn 4 and they're up for adoption. And someone says, hey, I am the uncle. I'm coming for the child. Like literally, it is hard to fight them because they are the biological, they're the next of kin. So for me, I come in or I am allowed to adopt after they exhaust all the kinship. Then there's nobody. They're like, okay, now that there's nobody, now you're the one.
Right. Okay. So is the goal of the court system to reunite the children with the parents as best they can, even though it could be a little iffy, or what is the goal?
That's the goal. Foster care means, hey, temporarily, I'm going to have you for a temporary time while your mom and dad or your relatives are getting their life together. And then you go back home.
Right.
But the way the court does it is so wrong because they wait and wait and wait. You know, this child who lives with us thinks, hey, I have a little one. I've had her since she was 1.5 years and she's 3 now. So all she knows is me, you know? Mm. So that is going to cause trauma for the child to be yanked out of what's normal for her to a place she's never been or doesn't know. But the court doesn't see that. They just say, hey, they are relatives, they'll take her. But that really causes trauma more to the child because you're taking her away from what we know. And there's nothing we can do to stop that.
Well, let's talk about that case in particular for a second. So does she call you dad?
Yes, I'm dad. That's all she knows.
And does she live in any sort of fear? I mean, I know she's very young, but that one day she might not live with you anymore.
No, she does not understand because she was 9 months when she came to us. So she doesn't really know. It's usually those who understand, like 4-year-olds from four onwards are the ones that live in a limbo. You know, they love you. They love your home and they love you so much. But at the same time, they still have attachment to their mom. They want to go back home. So they live in this limbo of, I want to stay here, but I want to go back home. So the court system destroys that. The longer they take, the more the child has been living in that limbo and causes mistrust and distress and more trauma to the child.
Yeah, of course. So what do you think is going to happen in the case of this young little girl, right? Is that
Little girl.
So what's the situation with the parents? Are they still fighting for the rights, or they are getting their life together? Does she talk to the parents at all? What's the story?
So every child is given visitation time. They have to visit their parents when they are willing to. Either they are drunk or high, but they have the right to see their child for 1 hour.
Oh, once wow.
A week, you know? So they, you know, they give them 6 months. If that doesn't change, they give them 12 months. If it doesn't change, they give them 8 months. So for us now, we are on year two going to year three. Nothing has changed.
Meaning because the mother or father could not get their, they couldn't stay sober or whatever it was for them.
Right. Whatever they requested them to do, they yeah. haven't done, you know? So, wow. So then they are waiting for them to do so. So now it's up to the judge to say, we've given you ample time and we have not seen change. So we're going to terminate that your parental rights.
Now, is this little girl that you said is a relation of one of the boys that you adopted?
Two of the kids.
So clearly these parents have had this issue in the past.
Correct.
Right. And then I'm curious what your relationship is like with the mom. I mean, do you think that they do this because they know that they trust you and you're going to take their kids in? I mean, does that make it almost easier for them and enable them to not get healthy?
Yes and no, you know, you don't have those responsibilities. So what do? You know,
yeah.
I mean, are you healing? You know, because you're not taking care of the toddler. I am, you know, that sometimes I think for me, because I know what my mother went through, you know, because most people on the streets will say, what a mother will let their kids be on the streets. But then they did not understand what my mom went through of what she was enduring. So I come with the same grace and humility. Like I'm not a drug addict. Like to be a drug, like I don't understand it. But at the same time, to really have empathy towards them, you know. But sure. Also, I want my kids, even if I adopt her and adopt them, I want to have that relationship, you know, for my kids. So there's no need of be hostile or be negative because I still want to have that relationship. Sometimes also when the parents get to see how parents you are to their kids, they realize like, you know what? I don't have the tools that you do have. So yeah. I'm going to really, rather than take away, I think I would love you to be the parent of my child. Could you keep me connected to my child? Does it make
sure.
sense?
Yes, so, of course.
So it's like you have
to- if they get to that point where they have no ego, because I think a lot of people, even though they cannot take care of the child, are like, no, that's my child. I want the child. And they make everybody's life miserable. I'm curious, your older children that have the same parents or at least mother, do they have a relationship with her or are they angry about their childhood?
So kids go through phases, you know. So, you know, I've had them for 4 years. So the three was foster care and then almost 1 year adoption. So we're still kind of really going to the adoption and them understanding. But right now they are kind of in a place of, why would my mom who say loves me not come back and get me, you know? So that is where they are. And you want to meet them where they are. So until they kind of understand that, then you'll be able to now have that connection. Like, hey, now they understand, how can I really help them connect with their mom without causing more harm to them? Because for now, I think my daughter thinks, you know, my mom said she'll come back, you know, that she loves me. And that's how it ended. So there was nothing bad that I happened to say, I'll never see her again. It's more like, think of, you know, you're dating someone and they go back to Europe and they never come back and no communication. You're like, did they break up with me? Like there's no close, you know?
Sure.
And to our kids, that's kind of what they are going through right now. Like, you know, what did I do? Why did my mom not love me that much, you know?
Right.
And once we go over the hurdle of them understanding, then we're able to bridge the relationship. But yeah. For my teenagers, they have that because now they're old enough to understand. So my teens have that. They can call, they can text, they can, you know, I can talk to their mom anytime I want because right. Now they are mature enough to understand that.
You've been a foster parent for so long. What are some takeaways that you would give to people that are listening to this right now that are contemplating doing it? How has it changed your life?
Oh boy. You know, it's changed my life in every way. I've always wanted to be a dad, you know, and give back. And for me, that has given me an opportunity. But two, especially for men, I think men, we've been, you know, we are told go work, but don't be involved in the kids' life. But I think for me, I'm trying to change that narrative. Like if I can be single and be a dad, a full-time dad, like any parents can be, it's not mom's job, but it's dad and mom's job, and kids need us, especially dads. You know, I've had 41 kids. No one kid had ever said, I wish we had a mom. Why? Because
I was going to ask that. Yeah, why?
Because they never had a dad before.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Right. Yeah. Yes. You know, the other part for those who want to foster, it is hard journey and it's a calling. You know, if you sign up and you find out you're not cut for it, it's that okay. Also, Foscare is not an adoption agency. Like, to go in knowing, like, I'm going to go in, but my job is to foster, not to adopt, because your heart is going to be broken in every piece of form. But yeah, if you want to adopt, you go in saying, I want to adopt. So from the get-go, they kind of know your intentions.
Got it.
They're going to press you with kids who are likely for adoption.
Right.
Rather than for Foscare.
Right. Okay. So explain something too, because I think people might be hesitant to get involved in fostering because it looks like a huge financial burden. I mean, how can you go through all these kids and take care of them? I'm assuming the state gives you some financial support for each kid that comes in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every state gives, you know, we call it a siphon, you know, every state will give you funds. You know, the kids come with Medicaid. They come with all the schooling they need, all the dental, they give all that. On top of that, they give you financial help to help you monthly to take care of them. If it's food, if it's clothes, that they give you all those to really help you. Even if you're single and you're not able to take the kids to the hospital, the DHS, the social workers, it's their responsibility to take the child to school. Daycare too comes with that. So for me, as a single parent, I won't do what I do and have a job and take care of the kids, but they provide the vouchers for Foscare. So you have so much resource to help you.
Got it.
If they're teenagers, also they come, if you adopt a child that's a teenager, they come, they will have free education for the rest of their lives. They have medication until when they are 21. And if they want to go to university, it's free within the state they live in. So there's help. Absolutely.
Wow.
To really help you to do whatever you need, no matter you have a job or you don't have a job, because the kids will come with resource that you need.
So as long as you can cover, obviously, the roof over their head
and correct, then and yourself.
Support yeah. yourself. Yeah. Then, and you have the separate bedrooms based on their ages or whatever it is and their sexes, then you can get some financial aid for the child. So you don't have to bear the burden. But I'm assuming, like, I'm curious about the school. Do you have to have, they can only go to the public schools within your district? I mean, how does that work?
So it works with, you know, so it's really, you remember, you're the parent 99%. So you decide, I want them to go to this hospital so long as they take Medicaid.
Oh, you can make decisions.
Yes, you make all those decisions. I want them to go to this school because it's close to me. You know, you make those decisions. The parents or DHS does not make those for you.
But how can you make those decisions if you don't know how long they're going to be with you?
Exactly. You just do what, you know, like, it's school time. If you know you're going to have a kid for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you're like, you rather go get the application, at least have it handy or say, okay. Because so for me, remember, I am licensed to foster any kid. So most of my kids are coming 2 hours away. There's no way they can go back to that school because it's farther away, you know? Mm-hmm. So unless if you're from the same county, sometimes it's a little bit close and the state will provide the transportation back and forth as well.
Right. How do you date?
Is that
sorry?
Food?
Is that too personal?
No, I like that. Is that food? You know, I mean, so, you know, I
have one child and I can't date. She makes my life a living hell. Exactly. So like, I don't know how you do it.
Like, there's no room to date. Absolutely. Like, for me. So I have a toddler who's just turned 3 and I have a 20-year-old. So for me, my life, I get a little freedom between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. I mean, right. Who's willing to date you during that time, you know? but also I think I love my kids that I want to pour everything I can towards my kids. That for me to bring in someone that doesn't understand the kids I adopt and the whole trauma, like I feel it's unfair to them, you know, to bring in someone who doesn't understand, you know, the joy you find in helping kids who are the most disadvantaged, but two, that are not trauma informed. Like, I think I will bring more trauma to that person, like unfair. Like, I feel it would be unfair to that. So for me, content, like to do this and back my mind knowing, like, I'm content where I am, you know, and I'm content being a single dad, and I'm content just being happy of what I do is for me what drives me and what I find, you know. Usually I say, if you want to date me, okay, you're trauma informed and you can deal with 7 kids with trauma. Sure, we can go on
right.
a date.
Well, I mean, I think maybe for you, it might be better to meet somebody that's already established in your life. You know, somebody that you guys always see, a school teacher. I don't know, somebody that really gets your life and has been part of their lives and is a friend and a friendly face and knows you, as opposed to some, it's not like you can be on Bumble having new people come in and out of your life, I don't think.
No, but also too, even teachers, you know, some are good at helping a child during the day, but they don't want to deal with them at night, you know?
Well, that's true.
Or,
yeah.
You know, or some just want to see them for an hour, but they cannot deal with, you know, most of their trauma. So it's really a calling, and that person has to really fully be part of that in a way, you know? I think for me it would be impossible, you know, somehow bringing someone that, unless it was their calling, you know, and it would be unfair to them.
Right. Okay. So do you have a limit on how many kids you want to adopt in the future?
10.
Well, your house is already somewhat full and you can only do 5, right, at a time? Or that means 5 fosters.
Teenagers. Yeah. You can cheat when you take siblings, you know? So yeah. I'm licensed for 5, but if I had 3 siblings, you know, it's easier to give you an exempt to 6.
Does that mean you're licensed to have 5 kids in the house or 5 fosters? Like you have 3 that you've adopted, right? Is that what you said?
Correct. So I can, yeah. So
you
I can
have 5 more that you're fostering?
No, yes, 2.
Got it.
But I can have 3 if they're siblings.
Got it. Okay, I got it.
Because the others are teenagers, they don't really need me, you know? So they're not really counted against me.
Right. But when they move out of the house, then that opens up a spot.
Yes, absolutely. Got it. So I would love to force more and adapt more if I can have a bigger house and a bigger car. That is my dream. The other part I want to share with you is most people don't want to foster because they're afraid of attachment.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Okay, tell me about that.
So yes, it's hard to befriend someone knowing they're going to go the next day, you know? And for us as foster parents, it's obvious. You get attached to this kid, you love them, you pour everything about them. But you know, in a month, in a year, in 2 years, they're going to go away. And that is hard to really do and deal with. And so most people are afraid of that. And for me, I counter that by saying, actually, the people who are afraid of attachment are the ones that can be the best parent.
Why?
Because they have what it takes. It's that attachment, what our kids need, you know?
Right. Oh, okay, so I see what you're saying. But they also have empathy, I'm sure.
Exactly. You know, they have empathy and they will fight for this child, you know, tooth and nail. But at the same time, you know, knowing that, hey, actually your fear is your strong because that's what our kids need. They never had someone fight for them. They never had someone attached to them. They never someone, you know, that is that close to them that you help them heal. So rather what you think is negative is actually positive.
So in general, it sounds like you've had an amazing experience as a foster and you would suggest it to people, even though these kids may be coming in with some behavioral issues, some trust issues, a lot of trauma and instability. You think it's been obviously life-changing for you, but do you feel that you've seen that it's life-changing for the children?
Yes, absolutely. Life changing for the children. Remember, it wasn't their choice to be born in this home. You know, in this home, they didn't choose their parents that are drug addict, that are, you know, that they're just innocent kids. And for us to be there for them is the greatest present we can give them as well. You know, to their bio parents, sometimes they never had a good example of what a parent looks like. So
yeah,
we can show that to them, that we are not just helping the child, but for the entire cycle of their bio parents, that we've changed the way they view and parent as well. But they need that example. You know, I am who I am now because I had a man who showed me how to be kind, how to give back, and how to truly love others unconditionally, because he did that to me. And it's easy for me to look back and say, he taught me how. You know, the same with our foster kids, the same with kids in foster care, to see them as human beings and say, how can I impact them? You know, for men and women who are 40 and you're like, I want to get married so I can have kids. Hey, maybe can you be a parent while you wait to marry, you know, rather than miss out on that opportunity of being a parent because you're waiting to get married, but rather say, hey, while I'm waiting, I'm just going to be a dad or I'm going to be a mom. Yeah.
How many of the kids that you've had have stayed in touch with you?
All of them.
Really?
Aww. Yes. So Christmas.
How are they all doing for the most part?
You know, some not so good, you know, because they went back, and 2 years or 3 years later, the parents just went back to
right.
why they had been taken away. And some have come back in the foster care system. And I cannot take them because I already have kids, you know?
Oh, I see. Yes, yes. I want to ask you, because you hear all these stories, or they're on all these movies about these terrible nightmare situations that you see in the foster care system, kids that have gone from being little and then change foster care homes all the time, or they're abused physically, sexually. How do you think that happens? Like, how does the court system or the child protective services not see how much worse off they can be in some foster parents' homes?
So, most of them, they are tied to the court system. Remember, the court system says the bio parents or the next of kin are the number one where the kids want to go back to. But most of them, when you're a drug addict, that meant your entire family was most of the time, you know? You know, most kids are abused sexually, not by a stranger, but members of the family. So you're going back, you know, to the same system, you know, and it's hard when they say next of kin have the right to the children, but yet, you know, the dangers, you know, what do you do? Do you?
Yeah, no, but I'm asking about within the foster care system, because you do hear these terrible stories about foster parents that have abused kids. That's what I'm asking.
40%. I mean, 40% of our foster kids are abused by foster families.
Wow. I didn't know that rate. That's a pretty high rate.
Exactly. And it's sad. You know, it's hard to... The way they screen, you know, you do the classes, they do background check. But when it comes to behaviors on how you parent, I don't think they are there to monitor how you do it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Were the classes hard you had to take, or it's just you sitting there listening to how to handle situations?
They were not hard. But for me, I had to take more classes that I had to pay for to get more education. Like, I wanted to be trauma informed. So I had to do TBR, like any resource that can help me be a better parent. I had to do that. Some parents don't do that. They just say, you know, I'm going to give them a roof, you know, and that's it, you know,
right.
Or sometimes they deal with the behavior. So they punish the child for the bad behaviors, but the child isn't like they aren't doing it towards you or against you, you know,
right.
Or sometimes foster parents think, I'm doing you a favor. Why can't you be nice to me? Why can't you do what I asked you to do? But this kid didn't choose to come to your home, so they have no right to have a favor, you know, or feel that you favor them or you did something good because they were forced to your home, you know? So remember, right. The difference is someone was forced to come and live with you, and somehow you think they should be grateful for coming to live with you. It kind of doesn't compute to the child, you know?
Sure. Sure, sure. Okay, so just people that are following your channel, I'm just curious, are you able to have a job now? Are you more of like an influencer? So, I mean, I know you guys do all sorts of things, and you're making food, and you're probably sponsored by people. How does it work? Are you able to work separately, or this is your full-time job?
You know, I have a full-time job. So I work for World Vision, and my job is to, really advocate for kids in foster care and kids all over the world that are in the muscle. So that's my full-time job, you know?
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, as a foster parent, I think some companies are not afraid, but I think the stigma about foster care, they're not willing to, let's give you deals that anyone else does because you're a foster parent. So yes, I have influence and I have millions of followers, but just because I'm a foster parent, some company will say, no.
Interesting. But why? What's the stigma, do you think?
I don't know. I'll be honest. We got a deal for Hyundai, you know, so they wanted to the car. Yeah, of the car. So they wanted us to do the ad for them. So we're like, man, this is really cool. We get to have their car for like a month, you know, drive it and test it out, but have the kids and go to a bank and, you know, make kind of content. Once they found out that my kids were foster kids, they're like, no, we don't want that.
That's insane. I feel like you guys would be a great representative for a company.
Exactly. You know, to most, you're like, it's social good, but also like you have faith and believe in people who
And it's a family car, whether you're a foster family or a regular family, doesn't make a difference. I mean, that's
correct. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. All right. Well, hopefully we'll have to figure out what car company, you know, appreciates the role that you've been doing and the help that you've been giving kids. That's just insane to me.
We want one so I have two. I can take more kids, but because my car is small, I cannot. So all my needs right now is a 9-seater car and I'll be set.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You need like a Rivian, you know, something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I love those. Okay. So just incidentally, when was the last time you spoke to people in your family?
Every day, nowadays, like nowadays, the technology is made it easy. The WhatsApp, I can know what they did. I can know who's not feeling well. I can see the rejoicing because you're on a family chat. You can see what they're doing, which has made life a little easier and stay connected to the family for sure.
Is your father still alive?
Yes, my father and my mom are still married. It's, just kind of strange.
They're still married. And are they still in Uganda?
Yes, they're still in Uganda.
And do you actually speak to him as well?
Yes, I speak to him because I think I wanted to show him an example of what a dad looks like. I wanted to show him like what love means. I don't think, I think after being a foster parent, I come to realize like sometimes people are abusive because that's how they were raised.
Sure, sure.
That's all they knew. That I
And
wanted
what's
to
his
break that up.
response?
Well, I think I think like 15 years ago, he talked to me, say, you know what? He calls my foster parent. He said, your dad has told me what a father ought to be. And I think that was enough for me to see like, oh, okay, he's really seen what a dad looks like because he saw how this stranger family treated me. And he's like, he calls them my dad. He's like, your dad has taught me. And I think that's for me what I needed. He's proud of me, I can tell you. He thinks I'm
Good.
the
That's what I was
coolest human
asking.
being on the planet. Yeah.
Have they been to the United States?
Not really. They have not.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So I want to talk really quickly. Well, you've written some books, right? And you have Now I Am Known, or the organization. Tell me a little bit about that.
So Now I'm Known organization, we do that to help teenagers and foster parents. So what I do room makeovers. Most kids in foster care have never had an opportunity to have a room where they say, I want pink, I want yellow, paint it the way I want. And for me, I wanted to do that for teens who are being adopted or who are moving in college or who are moving to another foster family. That if I can take that away from a foster parent, I get to do the room for them,
Oh, that's so fun.
They choose their colors, they choose their beddings, and we surprise them by doing that. That's really for me, what I love to really do. But also let them tell their story from a room makeover point of view, rather from what they've gone through, and that's really what I love to do for the kids.
Amazing. And what's in the future for you? Will you be writing another book? Are you what do you want out of life in the future?
Oh yes, absolutely. Well, I want to foster more kids and adopt more kids. And I just finished writing two books. So, we have a parenting book coming out in May, and a children's book coming out sometime at the end of next year as well. So it's been wonderful writing a little bit more. And really now that I feel like I have experience that I can share, people want to know, how do I do this? And I think by writing it would be the best way for people kind of to read trauma and how I responded and what I learned from it by having material that can help them.
Amazing. I think that you could write, and maybe you have already, but you could write an amazing children's book on the little boy Peter that you were, and how you got from Uganda to your life now. And then also the kids that come through your home. It would be so cute to have a book of little stories that they've written while they were there. I don't know. I'm not a publisher, but I just think I would love to read something like that, you know?
No, you're point on. I mean, you're on it. I don't,
Well,
how did you know?
Oh, good. Well, I hope you do something like that. What is your biggest takeaway, I guess? Like, what can you tell people again that are on the fence, that are thinking about getting into this? What would you say to them?
Well, look, for me, sometimes people say those kids are lucky to have you, but I will say I am the lucky one to have them, that their parents and the social worker could allow me to be their parents. Like, love on them and care for them is the greatest thing they have given me, that they would trust me and teach me. And for me too, it's helped me to heal and be a better human being because of being a parent. So it's not just a one way that I'm helping the kids, but the kids are helping me as well. So it's a both. Both of us are really learning. Like, I would say if you're out there and you have the heart and you want to help, there's 450,000 kids in foster care. We can help one, and I know we can't also do, or we, my calling is we can't all be foster parents, but we can all do something, reach out to someone who's struggling, give a coffee to a mom. Don't judge a mom, more a yard for someone who needs a yard, bring me coffee, give me a phone call, help me do room makeover. Like, we can't all be like you right now. You're not a foster parent, but you're giving us a platform to to tell our story, you know. So are you doing, absolutely, you're going to touch so many by just sharing our story, but in some way you're touching the lives of those who are also going through it as well. So we can all do something. It doesn't have to be Foursquare, but something along the life of a child to change their lives.
You are so inspirational. Peter, tell people that are listening where they can find you and follow your story.
Yes, you can find me on Instagram, foster.flipper. You can find me on YouTube, Now I'm Known. And you can find me on TikTok, Now I'm Known. Or our website, nowimknown.org.
Amazing. I wish you the best of luck. I'm going to keep following you and watch your story unfold. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.